Talk about changing the world. Our guest tonight, Mark Watts, has been doing that ever since probably he can remember, because he used to hang around his father and all the brilliant guests that used to be around his father. As a matter of fact, he was the doorkeeper many times as to who could get to his father and be in his company, because so many people wanted to be around him. His father is Alan Watts. And sadly, no longer with us, but happily, Mark is curating his work all around the world, actually, but mainly through the internet, which is, I mean, so far, which has been amazing, because so many other generations have been able to listen to his work as if it were as if he were lecturing today, and. It's as fresh today, if you listen to it, those of you who know it, in my opinion, if not even fresher. I think people are starting to understand it. So I'm appreciating what Mark is doing with his father's work, because it's bringing it into the now, which is kind of funny, because that's, you know, why not now? And you know, that's what Alan was all about. But Mark himself is a film producer. As a matter of fact, he produced a film about his father and his work. He's an audio producer and a field recorder. He's also a specialist in rock art. Now, I don't know if we'll get a chance to talk about this, but this just goes to show you the breadth of our guest tonight. He's a curator of his father's work, and probably one can say has been all of his life, and who better to do it than him. And he also worked for the foundation, the Joseph Campbell Foundation. So this all just ties in so beautifully, and it's exciting to have Mark on the show tonight, because if there's one thing that we like to talk about is change. And as I say this, I'm reminded that Alan Watts said a lot about change, a whole lot about change. And he also has a famous talk he gives about not changing the world. So as a great philosopher that he was, and a writer and a speaker, he's best known as an interpreter and popularizer of the Eastern philosophy for a Western audience. And happily, Mark Watts is spreading that to even a bigger and bigger audience than ever before. So with that, we're going to come right back with Mark Watts.
True performance takes more than just working out. Every day we demand more from our body. But what does your body demand? Hunger is not your body's call for empty calories. It's your body asking for nutrients it's lacking. It's time to reward your body with Boku Superfood, made from the world's finest organic ingredients, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and essential trace nutrients, all developed naturally and organically from nature's most nutrient-dense foods. Boku Superfood is quite possibly the best thing you can feed your body. So listen to your body. Reward it with pure, raw, beautiful food. Boku Superfood.
Clean water is not enough. Reverse osmosis, distilled water, and most bottled waters are devoid of naturally occurring minerals. They are acidic, unstructured, and hard to absorb, and rob minerals from the body. IonWays ionizers produce a super abundant supply of powerful antioxidants in each glass. Ionized water has a reduced molecular cluster size and a negative charge, hydrating you up to 6 times better. Water from an IonWays ionizer will help you restore your body to its natural pH balance, boosting your vitality. An ionized water more effectively flushes acidic toxins from within your body. Drink the healthiest water available today. IonWays water systems, their water changes everything. To learn more about IonWays water systems and how you can own one today, visit our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our sponsor page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
The show is evolving and as, you know, is changing. And, you know, to be able to have Mark on to talk about Alan's work and philosophy, which is so matter of fact and so in the now, or timeless, so appropriate.
Yeah.
And the fact that this the awareness for this philosophy and the resonance is so much more spot on. You know, it's time.
Yeah, and you know, I have to think back on, you know, we'll ask Mark about this, but he did actually say that some people thought, let's just say, didn't think highly of his work at the time. It was like, for some people, like crazy talk. And to listen to it now, it sounds like some of the most, it makes the most sense of so much that's out there. And it's like, how could this ever have been crazy talk? Those weren't his words.
Well, yeah, just like the world is flat.
Right, right.
And what, round? That's crazy talk.
Right.
And the sun revolves around what? And how much other, you know, truth has evolved through, you know, evolution, through the shift in consciousness. And that's what we're clearly at, a quickening of this shift and an increase in the awareness where people, you know, there's evidence that people can see this philosophy so much more clearly now.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you mentioned at the beginning of the show, when we first started the show, even us coming from the backgrounds that we came from, it's like people were saying, you're going to talk about what? It's like, you know, you have careers in this and you're doing that and you're going to talk about what? And now it's like, well, what else would we talk about, really?
Yeah. And I'm seeing it all around me. You know, this was when we started the show and times were just a little bit different. It's been, what, 3.5, 4 years now since we started this dialogue? And people received it differently and they didn't want to necessarily hear it. They didn't feel that it was necessarily a discussion that they would have or needed to have. And so much has changed in the world. And it brings up a quote that is an Alan Watts quote that I think is an interesting quote to reference given our show,
okay,
which is that the only way to make sense out of change is to plunge into it, move with it, and join the dance. And I think we just plunged a little bit sooner than some that we've shared with, and certainly not others. And I'm glad we're able to have Mark Watts on to share Alan's work today.
Well, certainly Alan plunged long, long time ago. Actually, Alan was born in 1915, and he lived until 1973. He held 2 master degrees in theology and a doctorate of divinity. He is best known as the interpreter of Zen Buddhism in particular and Indian and Chinese philosophy in general. He authored more than 20 books on the philosophy and psychology of religion and lectured extensively, leaving behind a vast audio archive. And thank God for that, because Mark is putting out that audio archive as if it were like today. With characteristic lucidity and humor, Watts unravels the most obscure ontological and epistemological knots with the greatest of ease. So here we have his son, a film producer in his own right, an audio producer and a field recorder, and curator of his father's work, Mark Watts. Mark, welcome to Life Changes with Filippo.
Well, thank you. Hello, Filippo, and hello, Mark. It's nice to be with you.
This is indeed a pleasure. Obviously, we've known about your father's work for a long time, and especially through the internet, and now we know why. It's because of you.
Well, and also because of the times. I mean, I think it's interesting to hear that you guys talking about how different times are even in the last 3.5 years.
Right.
And going back to my father, although he wasn't really a product of the counterculture, so to speak, he certainly came of age during that first counterculture movement. And, you know, if you look at the influence and the powerful impact, you know, the change in, you know, a few million individuals had on our culture going forward, you recognize the power of these types of transitions and, you know, these communications. And I think, if anything, you know, my father spoke about the internet before it was a phenomena. There's a famous talk of his called "The More It Changes," and he talks about us growing this electronic nervous system that would cover the planet. And this was back in 1971. And I think it's, you know, what he saw that the positive aspects have all come to fruition. And I think that there's an incredible synchronicity that occurs when you start to put these ideas in motion in an electronic format. I can't tell you the number of times I've had people tell me after hearing something on the radio or just chancing onto something on the internet, how often they say it was exactly the perfect thing that I needed at that moment. And, you know, I've listened to your father's works for 2 years since, and I've never heard it. It would never have, nothing else I've heard would have been as appropriate in that moment. So I think that there are a lot of forces in play here.
You know, actually, one of the things that led me into this career was a sentence, and it might not be exactly as you know it, but the sentence was, if money were no object, what would you do? And so that was something that I pondered with a friend of mine, and it's a great story, but not for now. But it's not until years later, when I started down this path, that I found out it came from your father.
Well, it's interesting. There's a video on YouTube right now called What If Money Was No Object? They butchered the title a little bit. But it's had millions of views. It's gone viral. It's all over Europe. I'm getting calls from European Department of Labor promotional people who want to use it in their youth advertising campaigns. I just got a call from a producer in Portugal who would like to use it in an advertising series. And you can see it's What If Money Was No Object? It's in the multi-millions of views by now. And it's just, I think, a sign of the times that this people would pick up on this theme. The original title was Career Advice from Alan Watts. Mm. And that's exactly what he's doing, is saying, you know, follow your heart. You know, what is it that you would do if you were not expected to do or, you know, commanded by economics to do such and such? And
yeah.
I think, you know, as we look at the first counterculture with its sort of tune-in, drop-out philosophy and historic lectures like the Houseboat Summit changes, where Tim Leary and my father and Allen Ginsberg and Ram Dass all got together and, like, oh, with Gary Snyder, let's not forget Gary, and talked about, you know, what was a really dropped-out lifestyle. Is there an option to live and create an actual counterculture, which at the time they called the Great Society? This was their idea. And, you know, when you look at those early ideas, you know, as you were saying earlier, during their time, these guys were considered real radicals. You know, I'll never forget, you know, my father was an Episcopalian minister after leaving the United Kingdom. And he was in New York and then Chicago at Northwestern, where he was chaplain at the Northwestern University Chapel for part of World War II, and then he came out of the church in 1950, and so he has a real upbringing in the Christian, you know, at least the Protestant world, and that's where he received his formal education.
So, Mark, I have to ask you: did they think the devil got him or something?
Oh, did they think?
Yeah,
I don't know. I loved his own explanation. He said, you know, for me at the time to be a priest was very difficult. I loved wine, women, and song, and that's not appropriate for a priest, particularly in those days. So, no, I think that with him, you know, he sort of went back into the church after already embracing Eastern thought. And I think he did it just to see if there was a potential for mystical Christianity, and I think concluded that not in that environment that it wasn't going to happen. So he left the church in 1950, went back to New York, and started working with Joseph Campbell. And I got a Bullingen grant that eventually produced The Way of Zen. And then in the spring or the late winter of 1950, he got an invitation to come and teach in San Francisco at the Academy of Asian Studies, American Academy, and which now today is CIIS. And so he, in the spring of 51, he headed for California, never to look back. So I think, though, that, you know, he brings to the conversation all of the knowledge of the limitations that people from that worldview are living under. And so I think that is where he developed his keen sense of the psychology. And also in his early years, when he was still in London, he was he haunted London, and in particular the Buddhist Lodge, where people like Christmas Humphreys and D.T. Suzuki would show up. And Christmas was an incredible orator. He was actually a prosecution attorney at the Old Bailey. And I'd never heard recordings of him, but legend has it that he was a great speaker and that he very profoundly influenced my father's speaking style. And so these were some of the influences that he brought with him when he arrived in San Francisco in the early 50s. And there he started to meet people like Gary Snyder and the whole cast of characters that was coming together around the Academy. You know, Gary Snyder showed up there, Hodo Tabassi, Gordon Onslow Ford, the local artist, and the people that would eventually establish the San Francisco Zen Center. And so it was really a rich cultural environment with the beat poets and, Kasaburo Hasegawa, the artist from Japan, was teaching there. And so all of that was going on before the counterculture really blossomed. It wasn't until years later that it came into that environment. So I think there was already a strong direction established. But when the counterculture came in, they just, my dad wrote a book called Beats Zen, Square Zen, and Zen, a little pamphlet published by Lawrence Ferlinghetti of City Lights. And it ended up in millions of backpacks. It was a book. That was a favorite. And then my other favorite was that little book called A Lazy Man's Guide to Enlightenment. You know, you just look at the cover and you're enlightened. There was something very Zen about that one.
I like it. Actually, I'd like to know more when we come back about what it was like for you. Just a little bit. I just have to ask because certainly you must have gone through your transformation or had your experiences with what kids at school thought or what you were thinking. I'd kind of like to touch on that a little bit to get to know you a little bit more. So as soon as we come back, we're talking to Mark Watts, who's the son of Alan Watts, who is one of our greatest philosophers and thinkers and authors of our previous time and still to our time today. This is Filippo on Life Changes with Filippo.
Are you like many people who want to make positive changes and improvements in your life and in the world around you? Do you ever feel like there's something holding you back from achieving your true potential? Join Stefan and Shaylee Schifeidel with the Tad James Company, the world's largest NLP, coaching, timeline therapy, and hypnotherapy training institute. Get ready for a life-changing experience that will give you the tools to transform your life through positive change and will help you create the future you want now. Their training programs are designed to provide you with the revolutionary knowledge, skills, and techniques necessary to effectively create long-lasting and life-changing effects. Discover more about neuro-linguistic programming and timeline therapy at www.nlpcoaching.com or call 888-440-4823. That's 888-440-4823. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as David Wilcock, Mariel Hemingway, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Marcy Shymoff, and Shadow Stevens on our archive page at our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, FILIPPO.com. Remember, you can also connect with us via Twitter and Facebook, and now in our own community at lifechangesnetwork.com, where real people come together to share real life in real time. That's lifechangesnetwork.com.
Well, talk about real people coming together to share real life in real time, and this is the time, and it can't get more real than this. We're talking to Alan Watts' son, Mark Watts, here on Life Changes with Filippo. And Mark, I just kind of want to know what it was like growing up in that time, because you were just a kid when that counterculture started and your father was becoming the celeb and talking crazy to some, and he was a god to others.
Well, it was very interesting. I grew up, with my dad, and as a young man, when we went every summer, we go down to Big Sur and, hang out with Michael Murphy and Dick Price and Maud Oakes and, the people who were part of that environment. And it didn't really strike me at all that what we were doing was in any way different from anybody else. I just knew that, we just had good friends and good times. And then when I was about 11, my parents split up. So I actually moved from California back to a suburb of Pittsburgh, PA, where my grandfather lived. And when I arrived there, I immediately and profoundly understood how different things were from California to, you know, the rest of the world and particularly to that suburb. And I knew that my father was writing books, but, you know, as an 11, 12-year-old, you really don't have a strong sense of what that might be.
Sure.
But when I turned 14, he mailed to me the book on the taboo against knowing who you are. And the first chapter of that book is dedicated to what you would tell a young person entering into life, what the most important things they would need to know. Mm. And I read this with delight, and of course the rest of the book, and for the first time I really understood who my father was and why there was this fuss about him.
Wow.
So I wasted no time. That summer I met him in New York. I think I sent you some photographs.
Yes.
The one with us looking at the posters that summer. And
right.
Then the following year, when I was 16, that was when I turned 15, the summer I turned 16, we met and actually were together on camera 3, The Big Questions, Who Am I and What Do I Want? We did 2 half hours with a group of young people. And it was fascinating. He was somebody that you could talk to on a very personal level, and at the same time, he had a way of taking the conversations just to a broader transpersonal base. I'll never forget when I first got back to California, I had a girlfriend and, you know, the normal problems that at that time, 18-year-old kid might have, and he said, I was talking to him about something, he said, Mark, I've got to show you something. And so we hopped in the car and drove down to Sausalito to the Tides bookstore. And he said, I have to show you some of my favorite beings. And he took me to a shelf that was full of fossils. And you could see these wonderful little communities of creatures frozen as they had lived 5 million, 8 million years earlier. And he pointed to a particular one. He said, everybody there died 3 million years ago. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, my little problems were just put in perspective. And I just, it helped me to get, the levels of, magnification that my father was using when he looked at these philosophical questions, and particularly questions of life and death and longevity and what, the human identity really was and who we are really as opposed to socially. And, of course, for me, at that age, it was absolutely fascinating. I couldn't get enough. I was, following him around with a tape deck. I would take him on his West Coast lecture tours with a Nagra on my shoulder and make sure that every session was recorded. And we made videotapes on the houseboat in 1972. And then, it all came to an end too soon in end of 1973. And he just returned from a lecture tour and was tired and went up the hill to rest and, never saw him again. He passed away.
Wow.
But, what an amazing person to be around. And, particularly the way he was with us as kids, there were 7 of us. It was very interesting because he was, he treated us all evenly but not equally because he realized that we were not the same. And it was just fascinating watching somebody who had that type of insight deal with, the regular, family, economic, all of these kinds of issues that all people, have to go through. And he did it with a real elegance. It was very fun.
That's interesting you should say that, because I was just about to ask you about elegance. I guess that's a good way of putting it. But there were, and still are, a lot of people who obviously follow your father. But at the time, the backpack people, the ones you were talking about,
right,
that had this little book in their backpack, a lot of those people grew up and got regular jobs, and some of them head corporations, and some of them are lawyers. And I know some of these people, and I think to myself, what happened to you? And there's this dichotomy in them.
Well, I have to tell you something very funny. Because my father, back in the time when myself and my girlfriend both wore all denim and both had the same length hair, my father would bug me, and he would say, oh, you hippies, you're a bunch of conformists. You know, I can't. You all look alike. You all dress the same. Everybody's got on patched blue jeans. Uh-huh. You know, where's your sarong? I mean, at the time he was wearing a sarong with a Guatemalan shirt. He would regularly wear a kimono, and so I think that he would not be distressed by the branching out of people into wherever their life and their path carries them. That was a particular type of expression. And I think that he was equally comfortable with many, many kinds of expression. He used to say that he loved all forms of religion, and he would talk about going to a Russian synagogue in Russia and a Buddhist temple. And he said that what he loved about these is that they were truly celebrating religion, not just talking about it and telling God what to do as if he didn't know, as he would say. But I think that he has that joyous spirit, and so I think that that people who have gone into many, many places, I tell my son, don't ever think you know who somebody is and what they're about until you've taken the time to have a conversation with them.
Mm.
And somebody may look a certain way and have gone through certain things, and I just had this experience today. I just sat down next to somebody who was, friendly, nice guy immediately. And by the end of the conversation, I realized how incredibly important it was that I'd met that person, because there are certain things that I'm doing that he was an absolute, the godsend, really, literally, to what I was trying to accomplish. And so I just think, the fact that we, diversify, that, we take on many different appearances, that we do very, very many different things, you can't judge things by appearances. And it's really important to take the time to get people's stories and to find out why they're doing what they're doing if you really want to connect with them.
I like it, Mark. This is great. And I think you and I are kindred spirits. I know when I first started seeing girls dressing up like Madonna way
right.
back when, and they were saying on TV, I just got to be me. And I'm like, what do you look like? Just like Madonna. I mean, is that you? So anyway, I love how you're saying all of this, and it's making so much sense. And so in my opinion, not only are you curating your father's work, but you're also spreading it, like what you're doing right now with us on the show is putting it out there in a different way as well through what you're sharing. So I'm looking forward to continuing this conversation with Mark Watts here on Life Changes with Filippo. And hopefully when we come back, Mark Lejeune is going to jump in, because I just know we talk about this stuff all the time. So
sure.
I don't want to dominate the conversation here, although I'd love to. We might have to do that another time. We'll be right back here on Life Changes with Filippo with Mark Watts.
Listen to these words. He would not be beat by forces too fierce for man, woman, or beast. As the going got tougher, his courage increased. It's a little story with a big message, a message that speaks to children of all ages. It's about believing in yourself, overcoming obstacles, and never giving up. It's been called a masterpiece, one of the finest children's books ever written, and a true children's classic. Shadow Stevens has been called Dr. Seuss for the 21st century. His big little book, The Big Galoot, is a story about bullying. Bullying has become an American epidemic, and The Big Galoot talks about it in a way that will touch the heart of a child of 4 and a grandfather of 104. It's the story of a little boy with size 42 hands, the biggest hands anyone has ever seen, and the kids laugh at him. Then the laughter turns mean. They mock him and trip him, and much worse. But throughout it all, Warren Galoot says, I'm a galoot, but I have good luck. You can't get me down. I never give up. A second grader named Chandler said, I thought it was the best funny book I have seen in my life. And we agree. Whoopi Goldberg said, this is a great story. Bravo, Shadow. The Big Galoot is available now as an ebook exclusively on Kindle Fire on Amazon for only $3.98. We strongly urge you to get it for your children, your children's children, or as a gift to yourself. Its message speaks to all of us. Have good luck and never give up. Go to Amazon.com and search for The Big Galoot by Shadow Stevens.
The There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
Yeah, Life Changes with Filippo indeed, but I have to say Filippo's life changes because of people like Dorothy and Mark LeJure, and we're back here with Mark Watts, and I just have to let Mark LeJure jump in here, because if I've gotten the most links on emails and Facebook from anybody, it's been from Mark about Alan Watts in the past years. So, Mark, what are your thoughts right now?
Well, I mean, I have more thoughts than we have time for, but Mark, so grateful to have you on the show. As we've said, right, such a fan of your father's work and the work that you're doing to bring what, you know, his information. I mean, he's a rock star now, and even more so than when he was active in this plane. But what I always found, at least from my perspective, to be so special about him is a lot of people in this space, in the transformational space or the sciences, the futurists, say so much by saying so much. Right. And Alan Watts, to me, says so much by saying so little. Oftentimes, when he makes a quote, he makes such a profound statement in so few words. And I'll give an example of what I'm saying. A quote of his is, "But at any rate, the point is that God is what nobody admits to being, and everybody really is."
I love it. Yeah, that's beautiful.
And the other one that really hit home when I was referring back to some of his work that had hit home for me was that the moment you accept that you don't know, nothing has to be explained.
And that's very, very good judo on that one.
Well, and it exemplifies my point, right? Right. If you get into those thoughts, if you get into those quotes, there's layers and layers of philosophy contained within, because they challenge various belief systems, religious, philosophical, cultural. I think more so you can understand why years ago maybe it didn't resonate with a lot of people, because they were more firmly entrenched in their belief systems. So to put something out here like this that taps into it, like with laser precision, but may not feel good to some.
And I think that what he was really doing was he was fascinated with what I would call contemporary koans. You know, which were ways of expressing things that were awakening and transformational. And, the Zen masters, of course, you know, with the koan system, you know, this is where the intellectual tradition of this originated, but I think it exists in philosophy, and I think that he was just fascinated with it. This was his love.
And I certainly believe that, and what's interesting is I do resonate with that idea of the translation of the Zen master, translation of Zen Buddhism, and that was one of his focuses, because at the end of the day, I think we're all aspiring Zen masters, right? We're all trying to achieve peace in our world and inner peace and calmness and stillness. Even those that aren't necessarily specifically or consciously on the journey wake up in the morning and are doing what they can to make the best of their day, the most peace in a relationship, the most happiness within the work environment, whatever the case may be. And he does such a great job at targeting the thought process to bring this knowledge in a unique way and really hit home.
Well, I think that behind it, there's a certain playful delight that he takes in seeing people in the process, and he chuckles because they don't realize they're already there. And I think that this is really a big part of his delivery and his sense of humor. When we were kids, my dad used to tell us stories about these two rabbits, Thud and Zud. We loved it. He would make up a different episode every day. And, 5 o'clock, Daddy, tell us about Thud and Zud. Well, occasionally he wouldn't have it into him to make up a fresh story about the buzzards and the rabbits and all of that. So he would adapt stories from Hindu mythology. And our second favorite story was the game of hide and seek. And he would tell an adapted form of the Hindu creation myth. And he would talk about the days and the nights of Brahma. And that during the days of Brahma, Brahma was awake, knowing who he was. But during the night, he was dreaming. And he was dreaming everything in existence. But part of the dream was that even though he was dreaming everything, nobody knew where the dream was coming from. And so you had all of these people that were the dreams of the Godhead. They were playing hide-and-go-seek with each other because they were pretending not to know who they were. And just occasionally, they would catch a glimpse of light in each other's eyes, and they would realize that they were the same being. And we just loved this story. And we would say, Daddy, tell us about hide-and-seek again. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's we can connect with that, and we can empathize with it. And I think, though, that he just absolutely delighted in that game of hide and seek.
That's fantastic, and it's such a testament to how much knowledge that he worked with in a reference perspective on a daily basis. Because it takes us full circle to what you were saying about the internet and the neural network and the access to knowledge being kind of that great equalizer, right? Where people are being able to compare and contrast. Well, that's what he did, and what you had the opportunity to grow up with is the reference to these stories and kind of bridging the gap between the current situation and this ancient wisdom from various perspectives.
And I think that this idea of every pearl reflecting every other pearl, this Indra's net metaphor, is extremely relevant both to us as beings, but also to this phenomena of the internet. The fact that we can connect with so many different nodes to find commonality. If we are truly living in the age of compassion, as the Buddhist tradition tells us, then what we have to come to realize is that nobody is going to get anywhere, advance at all, by climbing over somebody's back. We're all going to arrive together. And the more that we use these communication tools to recognize that we're all in it together, we're essentially helping each other along in every way that we can, then we start to see that, there is actually a hope, and largely through our ability to communicate, that we're going to pull this off. And I think that, the further we go, that the people who are not operating by that model, but are operating by an oppressive, basically a parasitic model, their existence becomes more and more empty because even though they may strive and succeed on a material plane, on the interpersonal plane, they're power-based. And so they don't have any of the richness that comes with that community. And this is just an amazing phenomena, in our evolution. That we are coming together and literally becoming one. And it's simply through compassion, through recognizing that, you're just not going to make it at the expense of somebody else.
Wow. Well, I couldn't agree more. And if one does make it, maybe it's just a temporary thing, or maybe you lose elsewhere. But before I forget, I just need to say that if people are listening and they're liking this and want to hear more, of course, we've mentioned how we've seen this stuff all over the internet, but we also have our own CDs and DVDs. And if you're interested, you can go to alanwatts.org and click on collections, and there are a bunch of CDs there. And is your DVD there as well?
The DVD is in the news section, and keep an eye on the news section. There's and there's also a section about the Mountain Center, the rural development that we're making to act as an archive and a development center for our programs and our films. But the film has just been released in a beta format, and it's on the news page. You can order the exclusive preview edition, which comes with a bonus disc. And you know, we're still in the sort of polishing phases of it, and eventually we're hoping that it will air on public television along with the other previous series that my father did. It's a labor of love, and it's also very much a grassroots effort. The film began with a Kickstarter drive, where the average donation was $5. So, this is something that comes from the hearts of many. And if you look on YouTube, you'll see the millions and millions of people who regularly view these videos that proliferate. And it's a labor of love, and it's just something that is a joy to share with everybody.
You know, I couldn't help make the comparison that if your father were alive today, you would have done for him what Tony Bennett's son did for him.
Right. Well, that's true. I mean, he's reached so many more people, since he left this plane than he did while he was there, and yet he reached millions and millions then.
Sure.
And it's sort of just the nature of the spreading ripple in the pond. And but I think that the other part of it is, what we were talking about earlier, which is that his message, I think, is much more timely today. As I was telling Felipe that in his time, people would say, oh, you're a radical son of a bitch. And we had people get up in the audience.
Those are the words.
Say,
I didn't want to say them at the beginning of the show.
And people would get up in the audience and say, you're a heretic. You're a bloody heretic. It was so funny. But today, we're on, for instance, in Tampa, and we've been on in Shreveport. And, for years, now we're internet-based, but for years, when those programs first went on there in the 90s, in the 80s and the 90s, there was an 800 number. And anybody could have picked up the phone and called me and say, this is heretical. You've got to get this stuff off the air. But it's curious. Nobody ever did. So that's how much we changed from the 60s to the 80s and the early 90s. And I think now we've gone a whole nother cycle of change past that, where, people are actually looking for ideas like this and finding them very timely. And, they're the actual on-the-tip-of-your-tongue answer to the questions that you had about, the cultural things that are happening today. So, I just think he was a few years early. And I think that that's very typical of so much that came out of the counterculture movement.
Yeah, either early or perfect. Because if he wasn't there, then maybe somebody else would have had to be, or we wouldn't have been able to move as far as we have.
Or ever-widening cycles.
Yeah, and here we are, and now there's you. And so as we talked before the show, you and I, and then Mark and you, I think we're going to have to be talking a lot more.
Well, that would be a pleasure. We've only just scratched the surface.
Indeed.
I didn't even get to tell any great stories. Well, maybe one or two, but it's about the doorkeeper, him being a doorkeeper. And we'll save these for another conversation.
Yes, the people, I'm sure, will be wanting to hear more, our audience at least, and of course, obviously, the world is as well. So, Mark, thank you so much. I want to remind everybody, alanwatts.org. Alan Watts, alanwatts.org. And Mark, unless there's something I left out.
No, thank you both. Thank you very much. It's been wonderful talking with you guys.
Thank you too, and thank your wife for us as well for getting us all together.
Okay, Filippo, and thank you, Mark. I look forward to following up and having further conversations.
All right, us too.
Indeed.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
We'll be right back here with our producer's wrap on Life Changes with Filippo right after this.
Are you achieving your highest potential? Do you know what that looks like? Louise Ashby Life Coaching makes it a mission to bring balance and abundance to every area of your life, giving you the opportunity to do and be all that you've dreamed. anything is possible if you just believe. Contact author and motivational speaker Louise Ashby for your complimentary session and see if her individualized style is for you. You can email Louise at louiseashby.org. That's LOUISEASHBY.org or telephone 323-592-3181. That's Louise at louiseashby.org or telephone 323-592-3181. Life Changes with Filippo is a premier radio show presented by Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people to corporate giants, celebrities, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your home or corporate office, and even through appearances on your favorite shows. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching and a private consultation with one of us, corporate event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, visit lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our representation page.
Gonna have to get together for that one. That's a long evening.
Well, we're here. If you're hearing us laughing, it's because we were talking with Mark Watts and getting to know him better and enjoying this, right? Enjoying what his father has allowed for us to do here, right, Mark?
Yeah. Well, he's he's been the foundation of so much that is now ever more relevant. Moment by moment. And like I said, these days he's a rock star. There's so many, I get, some of these videos sent to me by, kids half my age and yeah. they're sharing this information. So his work, his voice, his mannerisms are touching, all ages and the knowledge is resonating and that's pretty awesome.
I think to myself, some of these things we take for granted, like for me, especially for me, and as a life coach, I ask my students questions and make them ponder certain things, and then I go and find out these things that I have thought about for years. I didn't know they came from Alan Watts, and it's like, wow, where would my practice be without this? Where would my life be without this?
Well, for example, right, there's one topic that is very close to us, and we've talked about some segments that we'll be building for the show as it evolves and expands and whatnot, that center around the idea of people finding that which is in them, that is their love, that is their passion.
Yeah,
that
joy,
what they do, and it goes to that the one video clip that's shared, and I think there's millions of views now. On what would you do if money weren't an issue? And that, that's such a powerful, powerful piece, and it's such a true perspective. We've forgotten, in terms of society, have gotten away from the natural free rights we are by being alive. Mm. The idea that you can grow food in your backyard and you're not beholden to a supermarket is so foreign to some
people.
That's
crazy talk.
Yeah, crazy talk. and that goes across all sorts of discussion points, but the least of which is just doing things that make you happy. There's such a competitive drive, there's such a consumer-driven mentality that kids at such a young age fall away from their dreams. You want to be a dancer, you want to be a basketball player, you want to be a rock star, you want to be whatever it is. And at some point, you stop even taking basic steps and doing things basically for fun because somebody said you're too short or you're too tall, or you're never going to make $1 million that way, or you need to work to survive, or whatever the case may be.
Work is hard. It's interesting. You brought up just in the couple sentences you said, Alan would have so much he could say on that. So, for example, he says this is not a consumer society. He said consumer society, not a material society. He said because we're blowing up all kinds of stuff and getting killing the rainforest and all that. It's like if we cared about material, then we wouldn't be doing that. And then there was something else that you said. I think it was in that video that he talks about with the money thing, where, you know, it doesn't make sense to be working at something that you don't like so that you could buy things that make you happy that don't really, or I don't remember how he puts it exactly, because, you know, he has his way, but it's like, wow, it just makes you think.
It's the if then lifestyle. If I do this, then I'll be happy, right? If I make enough money, then I can buy this, then I'll be happy. And so people put their momentary happiness on hold for however long it takes, continuing to chase, you know, their tail.
And then they die.
And then they die.
Yeah.
All too often in so many ways. And or they're living dead.
Yeah, there you go.
Because they're emotionally disconnected. And then, you know, you get into all the tangential, you know, symptoms of, you know, the excessive drinking, the addictions or you know, other compulsions that are simply distractions from the fact that they're just plain unhappy.
Yeah. And then he says, you know, we're teaching our kids this. So now we teach our kids that you have to go do something that you're not happy about.
Well, think of it. Normal. Think of that kid that's sitting in the living room watching daddy, you know, grumpy, having to go to work again, being miserable, and not, you know, maybe dad has a huge talent for painting.
Right.
And
maybe the kid has a talent too. But.
Yeah. Well, or could he at least watch his father in an inspired state and say, what is it for me? So even if he took 5 minutes or got one canvas and doesn't need to be, you know, Picasso, but does paint simply because it's fun and it's a break from that monotony. And I think that's the one thing that people hopefully can take away from this and discussion and from so much of what Alan's work is going back to that living in the moment, living in the now. You hear it from all the, you know, the avatars and the great speakers, but really understanding that to take even certain simple basic steps to reward yourself by doing something that you love.
Yeah, and that's why I really wanted to know from Mark what it was like to grow up with a father who was doing his thing, like really doing his thing. And then it obviously worked, because if you listen to Mark, like there are a lot of kids of people that are famous or a lot of kids that, you know, but they're not in the place that Mark is. And I don't want to put anybody down. It's not about that. But he's got, from what I can hear and what I sense, he's got like his own thing. Like he gets it.
Well,
like,
think of it this way, for those people that know sports or musicians, or, you know, actors, you know, the children of very, you know, successful sports stars or actors or dancers or musicians tend to go down that path and have similar successes. And it's not just because somebody knows somebody. It's oftentimes because they grew up watching and breathing and learning the nuances of that commitment and getting the kind of training that you can't get in a school. You get, you know, at that age, you know, those young ages, the impressionable ages, seeing, you know, subtle habits and ways of thinking and some of the bits of knowledge that Mark was sharing that his father used to give him. Boy, you know, imagine that. And that's a father who's present and connected and giving that knowledge rather than disconnected, going off to work 9 to 5 and coming home and staying disconnected because of that unhappiness.
Yeah. And then you also heard that he shares this stuff with his kids. So just like his father said, that's what you want to pass on. And that's what he's passing on from what we can tell. And that's what we're passing on to all of you. So we're grateful to Alan Watts for having started this conversation, Mark Watts for continuing the conversation with Mark and I here, and to Dorothy for bringing him to us and bringing us all together, and most especially to all of you for listening in and being part of the conversation that matters, probably, in my opinion, the only conversation that matters. So this is Filippo Voltaggio reminding you that as life changes, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo, with the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the BBS Radio Network and visit us online at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles with Dorothy Lee Donahue. To learn more about them, visit the sponsor page of our website. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. Change the world. Now's the time. Now's the time.